Welcome to Radio Gorgeous, author of the week. I'm speaking with Gabby Capel about her book, Reparation. Welcome to Radio Gorgeous, Gabby.
Thank you very much. It's lovely to be here.
Could you introduce us to the story of Reparation?
Well, the story concerns an elderly Hungarian emigre, Aranka, who is generally referred to as Mutti. It's seen through the eyes of her slightly hapless daughter, Elizabeth, who is a researcher on a crime investigations program, television program. And through the course of the story, Mutti becomes obsessed with getting compensation from the Hungarian state for all the dreadful things they did to her and her Jewish family during the war. And the story does take them to Budapest and back. And they are chasing something, whether it is money or not. That is the question that I would like to plant in the minds of the reader.
Yes, so the story starts out, I would say people, the tagline on the book asks the question, what will Elizabeth choose? Is it her mother, her career, the boyfriend? But I would say that almost everyone we meet in the book is at a crossroads in their lives.
That's very perceptive. That's absolutely true. I mean, in a way, Elizabeth's at a permanent crossroads because she's sort of so terminally indecisive about whether she's really committed to her boyfriend Dave or whether she really should be sort of seeking the perfect Jewish boyfriend of her parents' dreams, who would be a doctor or an accountant. Is she really committed to her career? What does she feel about her mother? And Aranka herself is also a very is a person who's in many different minds all at the same time and who is haunted by her past and can't sort of escape really that sort of past reality. And so she's permanently reliving some kind of trauma.
And because she's currently reliving that trauma, she plows a lot into alcohol.
Yes, and people who know my family have spotted, I mean, it's not a difficult spot, that the character of Aranka is very, very closely modelled on my mother, who, you know, was a troubled person, and she was an amazing woman in so many different ways, but she did have her demons, and she started drinking at a very early age, and she was brought up in war-torn Hungary, so in a way, you think, who can blame her? But, you know, that doesn't make it any easier for the family who have to live with the consequences.
Yes, because it then becomes a different trauma that you are inheriting. And Elizabeth, the character in the book, is very, it's sort of almost an arrested development because she doesn't fully develop because she's doing so much caretaking and pussyfooting around her mother and her mother's moods and drinking and what you're allowed to say and what you're not allowed to say and the very obvious things that you can point out, which then her mother doesn't feel like she's, you know, filtering what she's saying at all or what she's doing, which makes everyone else responsible for it.
Yeah, I mean, that phrase arrested development, I mean, that is a very good one. I mean, another way of putting it is that they're sort of two little girls lost, and there is an echo of that in the kind of, you know, the murder investigation part of the plot too. There's another little girl who has been lost. And so I just feel as though it's, for me, it was an opportunity to explore what the inheritance of this trauma can do emotionally within a family. And, sadly, we're at a stage historically where the eyewitnesses to the Holocaust and, you know, all the related atrocities are all beginning to die out. But that doesn't mean the trauma is disappearing. In fact, I'd argue that it's getting, you know, more embedded in people's psyches as time goes on.
Yeah, entrenched almost.
Yeah, absolutely, yes.
Yeah. I wanted to talk about this because the novel is, it's very wide-reaching. It's very ambitious. You are, that idea of the crossroads is important because then we have to just explore all the different avenues that people could go down.
Yeah.
So in all the different aspects of those choices and a sort of 360 look at Elizabeth's life and all the people who are touching upon it. One of the things you brought up I mean, there's obviously a whole discussion going on now politically and very emotionally, and I don't think untied to Brexit and various other things going on in the world, about a sort of an exploration of Jewry today, you know, and the different aspects of Judaism. And to me, that's a very interesting thing, because Israel is not Judaism, and yet that becomes inexorably tied, which does link back to the Holocaust.
Absolutely. So, you know, as a, you know, I'm quite deeply involved in the Jewish community, and I think you often feel that sort of sense of slight when you see the Jewish community represented fictionally or dramatically. You know, you're always looking for those sort of accuracies, inaccuracies. You know, how is our community being portrayed? And so what I wanted to do was show the depth and breadth, and I wanted to show all sorts of Jewish people as totally normal, with their flaws, with their, you know, trying to escape the stereotypes, which is incredibly difficult.
I don't bother. I embrace.
Well, that's an interesting way of looking at it. But I just wanted, you know, to show the religious, the not religious, the atheistic, sincere, the, you know, the elements of hypocrisy.
The cultural Jews.
Yeah, the, you know. Exactly. And so, because actually my parents were atheists, and you couldn't find anybody more Jewish, you know, and they used to look at the world from a completely Jewish viewpoint. But when you mentioned prayer or, you know, anything religious, they sort of used to wrinkle up their noses and go, oh, that's so old hat rubbish. You know, they were rationalists. And then when I, you know, God forbid, really, married in an Orthodox synagogue, I mean, that was kind of like the last straw almost.
You'd think it would be every mother's dream, like, ugh. All those Frumers, ah!
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, I mean, there's a whole other issue, because we had to bend over backwards to prove I was Jewish. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as far as my mother's concerned, given what she experienced during the war, that was the rabbis being, you know, just showing their stripe. You know, that those bloody rabbis, you know, even when you want to get pleasure from being Jewish, then you can't get that either.
There's no winning. There's no winning. Well, and also, I mean, for me, just speaking of Jews who drink, I mean, we used to call those Irish Jews, you know, like, that's not a Jewish thing, like, you know, it's drinking.
Well, and so, in fact, which is what made, in a sense, my mother's drinking habits even more embarrassing, because my parents, like a lot of quite integrated Jews, up to a point anyway, they had a tendency to divide their friends into Jewish friends and non-Jewish friends, and sometimes they would invite them separately as though it was a different thing. And of course they always used to say, well, non-Jewish people, more drink, less food. Jewish people, more food, less drink.
It's you know, one of those stereotypes. One we're more comfortable with because we said it ourselves, just like anyone else.
Yeah.
But one thing is interesting. Okay, so I don't want to give the plot away, because I was surprised up through to the end. But one of the lines that you follow is Aranka's desire to find reparation. They haven't done as well, her parents haven't done as well, and they're heading towards retirement. And, you know, have to sell a holiday apartment in Ibiza. So she decides, seizes upon, she's going to put everything, you know, sort of very alcoholic thing, all or nothing, shit or bust, you know. So she's going to put everything on this idea of reparation from the Hungarian government. And they go to Hungary, or Elizabeth is summoned to Hungary. We'll leave that to the readers. But there's an interesting character that we meet there, Michael, an old fiancé. And he has some interesting things to say. Tell me a little bit about that character and what he had to say.
Well, you know, this really is a character to quite a large degree. You know, he's not really modelled on anybody real. Slightly, he is modelled on my mother. Actually went to She escaped Hungary in 1948 and went to Paris. And she lived with a group of French and sort of emigre students all in Paris and, you know, had no money before she came to the UK. And she had a boyfriend. And I met this boyfriend. So when I was 18, I went to Paris and lived in Paris for 6 months. And she still had his phone number. So I rang him up. And he invited me out to dinner. And I thought he would, you know, reminisce about what my mother was like and at those old times. And to my horror, what he said to me was this: "Your mother had a beautiful body. Do you?"
Creepy old man.
And so I didn't want to make Michael quite so explicitly creepy. I mean, I was out that restaurant like a shot. And I lived near there, so I was absolutely terrified he'd find my apartment. But, so, that was the inspiration behind him. But also, I had to amalgamate that with thinking, so, this is, you know, my mother had escaped, Aranka, you know, some people had escaped from Hungary. Either my mother was unusual, she left in 1948, a huge... Loads of people left in 1956. That is the more common pattern. So how would it feel if you were left behind? Now, Hungary was a communist state. It wasn't such an, it wasn't such an oppressive communist state as some of the others. It wasn't like living in Russia. They had food. There was a sort of famous Hungarian sort of compromise with the West, or with capitalism. So there was a bit of a... It was a halfway house. It was easier to get into. I visited Hungary before the period of Glasnost, and it was quite easy to get in and out and travel around. And but at the same time, it was a very poor country. And so I had to think my way into the mindset of somebody who had those memories, but still felt very militantly... patriotic.
Yes. And he makes a point which isn't overtly addressed, that, okay, so we should make reparations for what you lost in the war. Well, should we make reparations to everyone? You're only coming back because you didn't do so well. And you left. As well as there are other people who make the point, you know, these reparations, they're paying lip service to it. They're doing it for political reasons, to get in good with the EU, etc. And that it is a poor country, and why should we stump up money for you and no one else? I think that's thinking that's quite common. What is the counter to that?
Well, I mean, I think what happened during the Second World War was a crime of no, you know, without any parallel in human history. And that is the counter to that, that some of the things that were done were really quite, they were barbaric without, you know, with no bounds. Mm. So you think there should be some sort of justice for that. But on the other hand, looking at what happened to Europe after the First World War, there is a danger in putting the price of forgiveness, setting it too high. And I did, within my family, there are dissenting views. There were my late lovely cousin Ian, who died only this year. He actually spoke excellent Hungarian and was, you know, actually knew much more about Hungary than me. And he was very against the idea of reparations or, you know, any of these payments or all that. And he knew that my parents were interested and were investigating. And he really didn't want anything to do with it. He thought it was wrong. And I remember discussing it with him at the time. And I wanted... These discussions are often so sort of one-sided. You know, the assumption is, you know, yes, obviously, terrible things have been done to you. You must... reparations are a good thing. And if you're inside the Jewish community, you will only ever hear that view. Mm-hmm. But so I wanted to step outside the community and... have a look at it in the round a little bit more. Mm-hmm. And that's what's lovely about a novel. You don't have to sort of follow through an argument. There doesn't have to be a winner or a loser. You can just express a point of view and set, put it out there and let people make up their own minds.
Mm. Okay, so tell us how you came to writing, because like Elizabeth in the book, you are a TV producer, etc. So tell us how you came to write this book and how you came to writing and how you came to write this book.
Well, I am a TV producer, I still am a TV producer and a journalist, and I did always want to write, but what? You just don't really know. You have this kind of feeling inside you, I've got more to say. You're always, as a journalist, obviously, you're always talking, finding interest in other people's stories. And you're sort of, you do, that involves a certain amount of self-suppression. You suppress what you have to say yourself. And got to a point in life where a lot of things had happened to me. Well, I had, you know, I married, I've got three children, I got breast cancer, which is another, you know, not unrelated to my Jewish inheritance. That gave me a lot to think about. But I carried on working, and then in 2008, I took redundancy from the BBC because a lot of people were leaving. And I decided that instead of immediately looking for freelance work, I would do a master's degree in creative writing, which was a huge extravagance, because really I should have been out earning money. But I decided to use my payout and do that for a couple of years. I had a kind of pact with my husband, because he was a filmmaker, and he always wanted to make a feature film. And we went, your film, my book. You know, we had a pact. And he made his film, and it was a modest success. It was a lovely, beautiful film with Charlotte Rampling, based on John Banville's Booker Prize-winning 2005 book, The Sea. And we, you know, he went round a load of amazing film festivals, Toronto, Edinburgh, and you know, and then it was kind of almost, you know, that was my turn.
Yeah.
And we sort of did it simultaneously. It wasn't in sequence, but. So I went and did a creative writing course, because I am that kind of person who needs a structure. I need somebody to tell me, now you do this, now you do that. And I still actually, at that stage, had no idea what I was going to write about. And the course structure was that you had two terms of kind of workshops and stuff like that. And then you got to a point where you had two terms where you went off and you didn't have teaching, you were to write your 60,000 word novel. And we're sitting in the classroom, and I just remember it, and Jonathan Myerson, who was the course director, was talking to us about what to think about. I'm still thinking, what shall I write about? I don't know. And he went, write about what you know. You don't want to spend the next 6 months doing research. So I thought, yeah, that's true, that's a good point. But actually, I thought, it's not about the research, it was the write about what you know. And he just, I just thought about my mother and I just went, I've got an idea. Mm-hmm. And that was the seed. And of course then you sort of build it all up incrementally, and it's a, you know, it's a sort of very absorbing process, but quite, it's like torture some of the time, but it's a sort of like pleasure and pain principle.
Well, and now you have your book. And I noticed it was published by Hanno, which is a Welsh...
Yeah, they only publish books by Welsh women. So I tick both boxes. So my dad's family were German manufacturers, entrepreneurs. They had a Zip factory in Berlin. And come 1933, when Hitler came to power, the head of the family, who is my grandmother's second husband, went, we're leaving. And you know, I owe my existence, obviously, to that degree of foresight. And at that time, it was the Depression in Britain and around the world. And the British government was giving sort of financial encouragement to firms to set up light industrial enterprises in certain very depressed parts of the country. Parts of the country which had previously been highly dependent on the traditional heavy industries of coal and steel. So the choice for my grandfather was Glasgow, the North East, or South Wales. And he chose South Wales because it was nearest to London, and he was going to remain in Hampstead Garden suburb.
funny. I have a question about that inherited trauma. There is definitely a bit of that in my family and in me. And I felt it was fine. I could survive my childhood. And that was fine until I had children. And that brings you right back to that situation, which you haven't been in other than being a child. And your role is your parents. How do you change? How do you end that cycle? How do you transform that cycle?
Well, I was obviously determined not to repeat what I perceived as the errors of my mother. I mean, how arrogant can you get, really? Because actually, my mother was a very wise woman. Yeah, she had her weaknesses and her failings. But if I look around our circle, I would say that, you know, as mothers go, she was warm and generous and kind, and she wanted the best for me. I could really have learned a little more from her. It is difficult because I think undoubtedly my children, they have picked up on what's happened in the past, and nobody's a perfect parent, and you know, me least of all. So I think it's that thing of being the best parent you can be. You do your best and you hope they will forgive you, which is what, you know, sadly my mother died quite young. Both my parents died quite young. They were both actually 69 when they died at different times. So I feel as though I didn't really have the opportunity for that resolution that I kind of really had to put in the book. You know, everybody is capable of being, you know, of having that, of sort of really forgiveness, I suppose, is the word. Yeah.
Grace.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, sadly, my mother died very, very suddenly. And the other thing which I'm really a bit sad about is that I only once in my life, on one evening, had heard her talk about what happened in Hungary during the war. And I've had to basically stretch that very, very far because she couldn't talk about it and I didn't let her. I think she would have later, but then I had young kids and, you know, you're always running around, and I think I blocked her, which is really, you know, I'm ashamed of.
Well, you seem to have given her life and let her back in.
Yeah, well, I suppose in a way it is my form of reparation to actually write the book.
Fantastic. Thank you so much, Gabby.
Thank you.
And for more fascinating women, go to www.radiogorgeous.com.